All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. Yeah, come on. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Well, bright and early, top of the morning to everybody, and what up, H-Town? How we doing on an FYF Friday? Everything good in the neighborhood? That would be fantastic. Nick's here, Barry's here, I'm here, Usual Suspects till 4. It's an FYF Friday.
You're damn right it is.
F stands for football, plenty of that this weekend. F stands for funny, that means Nick's here. Barry's here.
Jerk.
And your Rockets put up a 90 spot and a half last night.
Yeah.
I called that one.
Did you?
I told you it was going to be a blowout last night.
Well, it's the Suns. I mean.
But they've been.
Now, granted, you were right, because that is a. If there ever was a definition of a blowout, man, you nailed it for sure. But, I mean, I would have been more impressed if you would have called they blew out the Warriors.
But it was a weird night for television because we were saying we were going to bounce back and forth. Every time I bounced, I bounced at the exact wrong time.
I tell you what, though. Yeah, if as far as calling it, being up by 90, you nailed it.
Not up.
I mean, but 90, having
but
90.
90 and a half.
And a half? That's a blowout.
And the thing is that they've been averaging 60-plus in the first half of games. But 90?
That's bad.
Only the second time in the modern era. It's the second all-time highest half in NBA history.
Now, I know you – okay, so you definitely – you called it.
Yeah.
Did you think it would be that much, though?
I did not, because I thought that they would – I thought Chris Paul would struggle a little bit getting back into the flow, finding the rhythm with his teammates. But right off the bat in the first quarter, he had, what, 5 dimes and about 8 points?
He was balling out of control. Yeah. Why was he on the bike, though? That worried me.
That keeps the leg warm.
Okay, because I was kind of flipping back and forth, and I saw him riding the bicycle going to halftime and thought, uh-oh, what's wrong?
I felt like he was just getting into it when they decided to make the first substitution. I don't think he expected.
Well, and I thought from a wind perspective that, you know, you would not hold back on him even if you're up, but you don't want him hurt.
Yeah.
But he needs to get his cardio back to an NBA level.
Good point.
So I was wanting to make sure that even though it was a big blowout, he still needed to get the run in. I guess D'Antoni was trying to do 5 minutes on the start of every quarter, and then we'll judge it in the fourth quarter. But, I mean, they were so far ahead, you didn't need it.
He played 21 minutes, so that's a decent amount.
That's pretty good that D'Antoni stuck to his 20-minute thing anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's a decent amount that you get when you're trying to get back into it. And I guess, like you said, the bike helps him stay warm. So, all in all, a good first game back for him.
I texted Mikhail last night, and I was like, hey, Rockets are playing right down the street tonight because they got a house in Scottsdale. I'm like, you going? He's like, no.
Oh, come on, coach.
Yeah.
You know, up and down that lineup, what the hell's up with Ryan Anderson? Come on, man.
When you hit 6 3-pointers, though, that's definitely going to help.
Right. I don't understand, dude. Like, it's driving me insane that this dude is making shots on the road but not at home. I don't understand that.
And it's not like it's like he went 6 for 16. No, he went 6 for 10.
Yeah.
So he had a really good stat line. He even, I think, at one point told Chris Paul, I love you, because, like, you were thinking Chris Paul was going to penetrate to the basket, and then all of a sudden he just flicks the ball over and just sets up Ryan Anderson beautifully from behind
the
3-point
line. One drop back where he took everybody in the lane with penetration and threw it backwards.
So I don't know if it's
fantastic.
Chris Paul or, you know, it's just Ryan Anderson on the road again. But, that's definitely going to help you win games if Ryan Anderson is.
Well, here's the thing if you're a Rockets fan that you really got to love, right? And aside from the fact that Chris Paul had only played one game in the first, you know, 15.
Right.
And they were as good as they were. But look at Oklahoma City. You got those stars. Everybody's talking about how great they are. And they have been getting pounded. They've been losing to teams like Sacramento. They look awful. And everybody thought, oh, the Rockets are going to take a half a season to really get used to Chris Paul. Doesn't look that way.
No, OKC 7-7.
Yeah.
500, 4 games back already in the West.
So it's
already
a good sign.
Falling behind.
Really good sign. And then, like I was talking about when I said I turned at the absolute wrong time.
Yeah.
I thought Golden State was going to take over that game in the fourth quarter against Boston. So about midway through, I flipped over to the football game, which was awful. And then when I flip back, oh, look at this. The Celtics pull the upset. And then I got to go back and rewind it and watch
it. Is it an upset? I mean, it is an upset.
It is.
But this year, it's really not.
This season, I will give you.
Yeah.
With the way they've got come out of the gates firing on all cylinders, I will give you that it's not really that big of an upset based on records. But yep. I think if you,
that was the point I was making. Yeah. Is that, I mean, Boston has two losses. Golden State now has four.
That's 14 in a row for Boston.
It's crazy.
I don't care what time of the season it is, and we know when the Rockets did their 22-game streak, what a huge accomplishment that was. 14 in a row with that makeshift rotation is pretty damn impressive.
Well, and we talked about, well, how many teams are good that they've beaten in this 14-game stretch. I mean, I would count the Thunder as a good team, even though they're 7-7.
Right, no
talent wise, they've got, you know, they beat the Spurs, they beat the Heat,
Toronto, Golden State last night.
Yep, I mean, there's some decent teams on there.
You could stop there and say that's pretty impressive as it is.
Yeah, to not break your streak with one of those teams,
but then start factoring in Horford missed multiple games, Kyrie Irving missed games. You're playing the entire stretch of games without Gordon Hayward. It's pretty impressive.
That's the big thing is when Hayward went down, I think everybody agreed on the same thing. They're done. That's it. It's the Cavs and everybody else. That without Hayward, it's not going to be pretty. And, man.
I'll tell you one guy that got off the Rockets' ass long enough to get on somebody else. Charles is holding very, very firm in his belief that the Celtics are going to have one hell of a regular season and be nothing that puts fear in anybody's hearts come playoff time. He went off last night.
Did he? What was he saying?
Oh, my God. He was like, you guys can tell me whatever you want. You can say whatever you're going to say. But I'm telling you right now, in the Eastern Conference, Cleveland doesn't have no fear in their heart when they see this team. Toronto ain't going to have no fear in their heart when they see this team. And Washington ain't going to have no fear in their heart when they see this team.
That's the argument that I keep seeing. Two things. One is, I forget who made the point, but they said it's better to they should be doing this at the end of the year, not the beginning of the year. They're probably already peaking too soon. You want to be playing like this in April, May. Not in October, November. But then the other point was, you know, LeBron and the Cavs and that the wily vets that they are, they know when to turn it on. And they're going to be just fine come playoff time. I don't know, though, man. I mean, I don't expect Boston to continue this type of performance. But when you get out to an early enough lead, at least having a good seed can certainly do you some favors.
We talked about this last year, and I brought up the Seattle Supersonics teams of the past when they got off to such a hot start that they got a top four seed just because you couldn't catch them. It was insurmountable. They had built up such a lead, but then they just got blitzed in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I'm on the Charles Barkley bandwagon on
really?
This one. I still am not a believer in Boston, and I believe that here's the biggest thing that everybody's sleeping on Cleveland. Cleveland is head and shoulders above every other team in the Eastern Conference and it's a big if right now, but if Isaiah Thomas comes back and it's like a huge trade without having to make one when he comes back, whether it be in January, the All-Star break, whenever it is, and because that's his ex-team, he's going to be hyper-focused on that as well. But when you add an All-Star caliber, best scorer in the fourth quarter last year in the NBA to your team, right at a time when you're kind of hitting a wall about the mid-season point, that could be a huge boost for that team and even more depth.
Yep. No, it's a good point. That's a really good point. You get a guy back that doesn't have that wear and tear. Because when is he scheduled to come back?
They're saying January.
Okay. So, yeah, he will have missed October, November, and December. So he will have missed 3 months that he won't have the wear and tear on. That's a valid point. I mean, it's like getting a trade, like you said. I don't know. I mean, I certainly expect the Cavs to make that run, you know, in February, March, and kind of maneuver themselves back into position. But this kind of lets you know that maybe Boston is way better than anyone gave him credit for.
This is the one thing I will say, and I'll be the first to tell you, I wasn't a huge believer in Jaylen Brown, but Jaylen Brown is proving me wrong. He can play, but I'm telling you right now, Tatum, there's a reason why Danny Ainge felt like he could give up the number one pick, and the one guy he had to have, he could still get at three, because Tatum is, God, head and shoulders above everybody else coming out in this draft this year.
Yeah, I saw something that was talking about if you could do it all over again, what would they do? And I think, like you're saying, I think a lot of people would be, I think Tatum would be the number one pick.
Yep.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, there was so much hype around the other two guys that everybody, you know, including the teams, believed the hype to say that Fultz was going to go number one and Ball had to go to the Lakers at number two. And I think Danny Ainge just kind of had a huge sigh of relief and went, whew, baby, this is great. I can get rid of the number one pick, get some more assets, and Tatum's going to fall right in my lap.
And I haven't really paid attention to him that much specifically. What is it that you see that makes you think, man, I mean, I know what he's the numbers he's putting up, but is there anything specific that stands out to you?
First of all, his length and the way he finishes around the basket. Because if you look at some of the angles that he had last night, initially when you look at it, you're like, he can't get that on the glass from there. And he's got to go right into the teeth of the defense. And because of his length and his touch, he still was able to play it off the glass, which the shot blocker wasn't expecting. He's expecting the same thing that we're looking at. He's got to come right at me. And he somehow, from the baseline, slid in and with his length, got it to be able to flip off the glass. And no moment seems to be too big for him. He steps up at big-time plays, and he plays defense. I think that's the biggest thing. When you look at the length of them, and they don't, you don't realize that Brown's playing the two guard at 6'7 with a 7-foot wingspan. Tatum can play the three with about the same thing. Okay, then you put Al Horford in the mix, and you start adding to the guys that you're going to put on the lineup. Even though Kyrie Irving isn't big, right? He can play defense.
Right.
Their defensive lineup, they are defending all across five positions.
I tell you what, statistically, when you look at it, I mean, they're a plus 7.9 in a plus minus category, which means they're scoring almost eight more than they're giving up. They're giving up 94 points a game. That's ridiculous.
Look what they did last night. They took a team like Golden State with all that talent and all that high-powered scoring, held them to 88.
Yeah, that's a big thing, man. That's one of those things about the NBA that can be the great equalizer. If you can play really good defense, you can overcome a lot. You know, maybe you can't fill it up, but so my question to you is, knowing what you know about Tatum, mm-hmm. who are you projecting as your rookie of the year? Simmons or Tatum?
I still think Simmons is going to win it.
Okay.
I do. Because now Tatum's
kind of with you there.
Tatum's been hurt a little bit, right? So he's missed a few games. And that'll be a big thing. Injuries. And because, look, Simmons sat out an entire year last year. So they're going to probably watch him a little bit. But the way he and Embiid are playing right now, it's hard to argue with that.
But let me ask you, if the Celtics continue and maintain, you know, a top one or two seed, does that help Tatum over Simmons if Philly finishes somewhere around 7 or 8?
Helps Tatum? Does it help him over Simmons? No, because of the hype machine. Because nationally, all we're hearing about is this 1-2 Simmons. Punch and yeah. Simmons and
Embiid. Best rookie ever.
Yeah, and all those other things. I think the hype machine will keep Simmons on top.
Okay.
So we'll see. And you had him too. I mean, we both said he'll be rookie of the year.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see, though, because I don't know how long the Boston Celtics can keep doing what they're doing, but it's been pretty impressive.
Yeah, it really has.
So we're just getting started, and we threw you a curveball on an FEF Friday and decided to get right down to sports in the opening segment. We got plenty more to get to, so it's the usual suspects till 4, and we want you to be a part of the show. That's why we call it what we do. 713-780-3776. That's the HRNP listener line. You can call, you can text, or you can hit us on Twitter at @ThePronounceNick, at @PacManJoel with a K, at @BarryIsFunny. Right now, I want to tell you about my good friends at American Wheel and Tire. I'm telling you right now, folks, I've been saying this over and over again. If you ever had damage to a tire or a rim, whether it be stock rims and tires from a new car or a car that you bought right off the dealership lot, or you had custom rims and tires and you've had damage to it, or you want to get custom rims and tires, you don't want nowhere to go because you don't want to get ripped off, I got the place for you. 290 and 34th Street, just outside the Loop, it's American Wheel and Tire. They've got everything for you under one roof. It's a huge, beautiful showroom. They've got everything from rims and tires to lift kits, off-road accessories, Kevlar coating, and so much more. And they do all the work right there under that same roof. And they do it while you sit in a comfortable waiting room with a big window where you can watch the work being done to your automobile. You can ask questions along the way. They communicate with you if there's things that need to be changed or done to make sure it's fixed properly. And they're never going to pull the wool over your eyes. They're going to be 100% honest. They're going to do all the work in-house, and they're going to make sure that you're happy and satisfied so you come back again and again. It's the way they've been doing business for over 15 years. I know the owners personally, and Mike and Tammy Gus. I have purchased my rims and tires and gotten my tires repaired there for all those 15 years because I believe in them. I know I'm not going to get screwed over like some of those other stores when you go in there and you go in with just a flat and all of a sudden you're paying for a new tire and rotations. and all kinds of different balancing and things that you didn't need, didn't expect, and didn't want to pay for, but you're left with holding just the receipt and knowing that you got charged for all that and you're not happy about the deal. That's never going to happen at American Wheel and Tire. They're there for you. They're going to take care of you because they're Houstonians like you and they want you to come back again and again. 290 and 34th Street, just outside the Loop. But do yourself a favor. Go to AmericanWheelandTire.com and check out all the different things they've done to vehicles in the Houston area.
About a positive LSD story, wouldn't that be newsworthy just once to base your decision on information rather than scare tactics and superstitions and lies? I think it would be newsworthy. Today, a young man on acid realized that all matter is merely energy condensed to a slow vibration, that we are all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. There is no such thing as death. Life is only a dream, and we're the imagination of ourselves. Here's Tom with the weather.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, you heard it right. It's an FYF Friday right here on The Usual Suspects. That means that F stands for funny as well. And what we've been doing lately, thanks to the brainchild of my partner to my right, is including comedians on Fridays with either ties to the area, maybe they're coming into town, or just damn funny guys, like the one you just heard, the bit from Bill Hicks. So Barry, give us a little background on Bill.
Yeah, Bill Hicks, probably the most famous comedian to claim Houston as his home. I mean, he wasn't born here necessarily, but he got here as quickly as possible. He went to high school here. He actually started doing comedy when he was 16. He would sneak out of his house and drive down to the comedy workshop and go on stage like at open mics and stuff and started doing comedy that way. And eventually made his way to L.A. and then the Texas Outlaw Comics. And he really he was a darker comedian. But when you start talking about the best ever, Hicks usually makes the list somewhere in the top 5 to 10. He was just that good. He was kind of like, I'll say, I don't think that Bill Hicks was necessarily the absolute funniest guy. But he made you laugh, he made you think, and sometimes that can be the mark of a great comedian just as much as somebody that just makes you bust a gut laughing nonstop. You know, like no one's ever going to lump Bill Hicks and Kevin Hart together because it's two completely different styles and two different – Kevin Hart doesn't make you go, man, that's a great point, and laugh at the same time. You know what I mean? But that was Hicks's big thing. He
put him pretty high, like top five, top ten. I don't really watch his stuff, so now I'm going to.
Yeah, he if you like Carlin – if you like comedians that'll kind of get philosophical and also, but at the same time, kind of, you know, he's funny. But he makes you think. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to describe it.
It's weird for me though. When you get a little philosophical, I kind of prefer to watch that live. Is that weird? Like I'd rather see it in person than on TV. It just makes me laugh more. If your jokes are more in depth, I'd rather see that live, like
really?
In person.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes
TV,
sense.
I
though.
Feel like I won't pay attention to him.
Yeah. Like Hicks.
But in person, he might slap you in the face.
But yeah, him and Andy Huggins, Riley Barber, Jimmy Pineapple, they all kind of constituted the Texas Outlaw Comics.
I was going to say, Texas Outlaws, you've had between having Andy Huggins and some of the guys you've had on, even Billy D, and the people that we've had come through the doors for this show have all paid homage to Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
That should say something.
Yep, yep. They all kind of, it all starts and ends with Hicks when it comes to Houston comedy. I mean, there's been a lot of good names that have rolled through here, but he's by far the quintessential. When you think Houston comedy, if you're looking for the biggest name to have made it, it's Bill Hicks.
Now, does he play around Houston every so often, or is he still out there on circuit?
Bill Hicks?
Yeah.
Oh, he's passed away. He passed away a long time ago. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he died in, I got to look it up, like 94, 93, something like
Nick,
that.
You're not going to be able to see him in person.
Yeah.
Just letting you know.
Yeah, you're definitely not watching Bill Hicks live.
I was like, is this guy, he looked young. I didn't really realize when the video.
No, he broke big time, like, overseas at first. Actually, the way he really started to make a name for himself was he started, it was around the time that punk music and the punk scene started becoming more popular, mm-hmm. kids were becoming disenfranchised with, you know, the government and parents and all that. And he was kind of that representation from a comedic standpoint for kids and people. That's why he was the Man in Black, and he smoked and he talked trash, and he would yell at people in the front because they maybe, you know, he'd be in some podunk town and they would be ignorant and say something. And he would just go after people because he didn't care. He had a very punk rock vibe as a comedian. And so he really started to build this loyal following. And it kind of blossomed. And then he went overseas and he was really big in you know, Europe and overseas too. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Pretty neat. I mean, it's worth there's a movie out called The Life of Bill Hicks, I believe. Andy's in it. Andy Huggins is actually in the movie. It's more of a documentation, but he said it started to change when he started, like, you know, doing some different drugs, and he started to see things differently and thought about it. You'll hear that a lot with comics. Comics start getting high, or they'll take mushrooms, and their perspective completely changes on how they do
Richard
comedy.
Richard Pryor, for sure, right?
Yeah.
So that's interesting. That's good stuff. So we'll have some other clips from Bill Hicks throughout the show today on an FEF Friday for funny. Also, how about the congratulations that are in order for one Jose Altuve? I was a little worried. You kind of put my worries to bed a little bit by showing me the experts article yesterday that said 26 of the 27 experts had Altuve winning it. But I was still refreshing my computer and damn them at ESPN for announcing Stanton first, because I kept refreshing and refreshing. And finally, Lisa was in the kitchen and yelled, "Altuve got it." And I'm like, thank goodness, because he deserved it. But just, I was telling you guys in the meeting this morning, you can't stop thinking highly enough of this guy, because he's so humble. He's just fantastic. And he literally did not know when he was going to, as they were setting him up for the satellite interview with MLB Network last night, and he was listening to them as they were rattling off, Aaron Judge had a great year. Unfortunately for Aaron, only 2 first place votes. And that's when it hit him that he was going to get it. And he literally almost came to tears. He started shaking his head. He bowed his head. And you're like, you know what? This dude is just so classy and so great. And then he followed it up with this sound right here.
Guys, you know, I don't know what to say. I wasn't expecting this. This is great. You know, I want to thank God, my family, that is right outside, and all my teammates. You know, I think my teammates made this for me. They made me an MVP, and I'm so happy. I feel like I want to cry right now. I don't know what to do. But I wasn't expecting this. You know, I want to congratulate Aaron Judge and Jose Ramirez for having a great season. And, you know, I don't know.
he just didn't have anything prepared, and it's just, that's just who he is. He's so humble and so real life that you just can't help but love the guy.
Oh, you can't. There's a few guys that I think, you know, to me, that would transcend a team. Judge is really one of those guys. As much as you want to hate Judge, his response was super classy on Twitter and said it was well deserved, and he was definitely the MVP. And I don't know the exact quote, but the way Judge handled it on Twitter was great. And everything I've heard and everything you see when you watch him is that they say his problem might be that he's too nice, that he's just a super good guy. You want to hate a guy like Judge, but you kind of can't. But I get it, because he's a Yankee. But I doubt anyone in baseball, any fans or otherwise, really hate Altuve. He might have gotten booed when he was playing the Dodgers, but let's be real. Nobody in L.A. hated Altuve.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, there's no way that they hated Altuve. I said it like when Pat Bev was here. People hate Pat Bev.
No doubt, but I said
he's that guy that if he doesn't play for your team, you absolutely hate that dude.
I said it for years. I said it on the broadcast. I said it here. Everybody else hates Pat Bev, and there's 31 other teams in the league that aren't sending him a Christmas card, but he'll more than make up for it with all the fans of the team he's playing
when
for.
When he plays for you, you like him.
Because he plays his ass off.
I think Altuve is the complete opposite. But I'm happy for him. I'm glad. I was nervous a little bit as well. But, you know, the more that it went on, you kind of felt like that dude deserves the MVP.
Regardless of the national bias and the New York media and everybody that was worried about it, the fact of the matter, stats don't lie. He was so consistent throughout the year. He never had a drop off.
Yeah.
He never had the drought that Judge had after the All-Star break.
That's the big one. To me, that's what cinched it, is if Judge would have maintained his pace of play, I think he wins it. But he had that drought. The Yankees lost, you know, first place in their division, and that probably cost him the MVP.
And he's going to have plenty of ample other times to try and get back at it. But here was his exact tweet, MVP with 3 exclamation marks. Nobody more deserving than you. Congrats on an unforgettable 2017. That's what Judge sent to Altuve with a picture of the two of them playing. That's just classy.
Super classy. That was great. Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, yes, he's a Yankee, but you can't help but pull for a guy like Aaron Judge, too. Baseball's in pretty good hands in the American League with those two guys at the forefront.
Word.
And even Mike Trout.
Word.
All right, we'll continue to roll on. Alex, we see you. We're going to get you some football, so we'll get you in here. If you want to join the show, 713-780-3776, HRP listener line. Call or text, or you can hit us on Twitter. And by the way, Charlie Pulillo's in the building, so he should join us next for the next half hour right here on The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
On hold.
7-5. Hey, as advertised, the person of interest that joins us Mondays and Fridays on The Usual Suspects is none other than Charlie Pulillo. He's in studio with us. He'll be here till 2 o'clock, so we'll cover some things with him. But we did want to get to Alex, who's been waiting a little while. He wants to talk some football real quick before we get to Charlie. Alex, what's up?
Yeah, I was listening to the show before y'all, and a guy called and said he was wondering about the Saints, and they said that y'all were hating on them. They couldn't win this weekend, and if they did, then they were going to lose the next three.
I said they're going to lose three of their next four, and I'll stand by that. We'll see. And if they don't, then more power to them. That they're proving that they're for real. But they've got a hell of a tough four-game stretch.
So you're saying they got to win the next four before they're real?
I don't say they have to, but I said, you know what? Everybody's got their own opinion. In my opinion, look, they beat Aaron Rodgers in Lambeau Field. Aaron Rodgers is Packers without Aaron Rodgers. They've won some games that haven't impressed me. I know that their schedule coming up is tough. I know they still have to play the Falcons and the Panthers once, if not twice. I know that they have Seattle, and I know that they have the Redskins who have been playing better. That's a good thing because it's at home. They're going to impress me if they can come through this four-game stretch with, you know, a 2-2, 3-1 record. But if they don't, you know, it's going to tell me a lot about the Saints.
Well, they don't play Seattle unless they go to the playoffs.
Well, the games
they've got ahead of them is the Redskins. Then they've got to play the Rams, which that's going to be probably the best.
That's
game.
Who I meant. That's
and
who
they've
I meant.
Already beat Carolina once in Carolina, and Carolina has to come to the Superdome. And then they do have to play the Falcons still twice, and then the Jets.
Right, late in the season, the schedule gets better for them. But I misspoke on Seattle. We covered the schedule yesterday. It was the Rams. We were talking about some other schedule as well with Seattle in it. But look, bottom line is that's my opinion. You can have yours, and that's why we agree to love sports and debate.
I mean, I was really surprised. I mean, honestly, after they beat Buffalo the way they did without Drew Brees actually throwing a touchdown pass, I mean, that if anything, showed that, hey, they can win more than one way.
Okay. Well, then if they keep winning more than one way, then you can call me and tell me that I was wrong.
All right. I'll do that. Thanks.
Okay.
Appreciate it, Alex.
Thanks a lot, Alex.
Who dat?
Wow.
I don't know why that turned all of a sudden into just you having to be defensive about the Saints. I don't really know. I mean, I think you're right by saying that the next four games are going to tell you what kind of Saints team this is.
Yeah.
I don't think that's inaccurate to say that. I disagree with you that I think they're going to lose three of the next four. But I think that you're going to know if this Saints team is for real. I heard somebody, I think it was AJ, was making the point that he wasn't impressed with them either because they haven't beaten anyone, which I kind of disagree. I mean, the Panthers win is good. The Lions mm-hmm. win is good. Anytime you can win on the road, it's good. They went on the road and beat the hell out of Buffalo. So I'm impressed with the Saints thus far, but this will be the toughest stretch that they face.
Charlie, welcome to the show. Your thoughts?
Fellers. Look, first time in years, the Saints have a credible NFL defense.
Yeah.
Marshawn Lattimore is probably about locked up defensive rookie of the year. The other corner they drafted after him has played well. They should go at least 11-5. Maybe they can win 12, but lighten up, Francis. After 7-9, don't be upset because someone's thinking you're not necessarily going to win a Super Bowl just yet. That game at the Rams is massive. We're talking home field advantage. Right? The Eagles look like they're pretty solid to be either the first or second seed. So who gets the second bye week in the NFC? Maybe that Rams-Saints game decides it next Sunday.
And look, the fair thing to say, even with teams like the Cowboys or the Eagles, and we've mentioned this for several teams, this is the key part of a lot of team schedules where the Cowboys and Eagles are still going to meet twice. You know, the Cowboys schedule, it heats up. The Eagles are going to have to put up or shut up because as good of a start as they got off to, their schedule is going to show some big-time opponents. So it's going to be a fun time to watch football, but it's not unfair to say, hey, you got to prove yourself now, or you might find yourself on the outside looking in after these next four or five games.
And I get that you said that they lost to Carolina, but if I'm not mistaken, Cam threw like three interceptions and played atrocious. Don't expect that to happen twice.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't expect that to be the case twice. I get it. This is a good defense, but don't expect Cam to throw for about 150 yards and three interceptions and no touchdowns and not rush for one either. He may have rushed for one in that game, but he'll have a better game, and that'll be a bigger difference for him. I'm not saying they win, but
it's about the NFC South. Yeah, the Saints stout 7-2, Carolina 7-3. Atlanta, after the transition of Kyle Shanahan out, maybe settling in offensively, 5-4, but obviously upside.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Buccaneers. I think the record's been expunged, but I believe my preseason pick to win the NFC South. They're 3-6, and Jameis Winston's facing allegations of groping an Uber driver.
Yeah, I saw that.
A year and a half old incident. I know justice winds in strange ways some points, but look, even if he's innocent of it, how many different things can Jameis Winston get caught up in after getting around? If it was a completely bogus charge, you'd think you'd be scared a little straighter after dealing with a rape allegation while you're in college.
I was going to say, how many times can he avoid the big one? Because, you know, you had the crab legs thing, and it's been one thing after another that he's managed to kind of...
Yelling in the cafeteria.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and then you get the whole hard knocks thing.
We can cross off Winston and Elliott from the Pro Bowl list.
Yeah, for sure. But you do the whole hard knocks thing where he just tried to come off as, you know, America's next, you know.
He was very likable on that
waiting
show.
And, yeah, you know,
really
love me and all of his motivational speeches and everything like that. And then just the whole year has been a disaster.
And that's where I think it makes it natural to wonder, is it well-crafted PR team, public spin, here's how you present yourself in this setting? Or is it a guy you hope is maturing and understanding the whole world does not revolve around him? Because, yeah, a couple of those settings you mentioned, particularly the schoolroom with the kids, that was great stuff.
Yep.
But how about walking your own talk a little bit?
Well, and that's the fact of the matter, too, because he started to believe the hype. Everybody was picking him. There were a lot of people that picked him as a dark horse to win the MVP this year.
Or at least to win the NFC South.
Well, that would be someone else. Yeah, but that's, as you said, that's no longer can be found on the internet. But the bottom line is...
I took the Giants to win the East.
I did, really? Yeah.
The defense on paper was fantastic.
Yeah. I had the Giants as well, I believe.
That's just
New York
bias,
Charlie.
That is.
It's just smart people being proven wrong.
You watched them last week. I mean, look, for everybody that after poo-pooed on Jared Goff after a year, but we talk about a defense. Now, they got a defense, and they've got weapons all over on offense, and Jared Goff's just – all he's got to do is not make mistakes. That's a pretty impressive team right now.
And probably the most under-heralded addition because he doesn't touch the ball, right? Goff has evolved. Todd Gurley is back. Sammy Watkins, Robert Woods. Their left tackle, Andrew Whitworth.
Yep.
Not as simple as cause and effect, but he leaves the Bengals, and suddenly Andy Dalton and that Cincinnati offense, Whitworth just, he locks down Goff's blind side, 35, 36 years old, and still an elite left tackle. That team's legit, and we knew their defense was real. You know, the Aaron Donald holdout had no setbacks, so they're a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And one more reminder that Jeff Fisher was never anything more than a mediocre head coach.
Amen to that.
We needed another one.
We talked about the two guys that they said had to have naked pictures of somebody that were still hanging out of their job. Marvin Lewis was the other one. But Jeff Fisher, for a 500 record that kept getting extensions and kept getting multi-million dollar contracts, you kept scratching your temple going, what am I missing?
It's funny because I think you see the formula for young quarterbacks that have potential, have skill sets, but can be good. When you look at what Dak Prescott did last year, having a great running game with Ezekiel Elliott, you look at Goff this year, the fact that, like you mentioned, the line got better, which was a key last year for the Cowboys, but also Todd Gurley's one of the better backs in the NFL, so you can rely on him to run the ball. You have to respect that, and it gives these guys an opportunity to be able to throw the ball around a little bit, and as long as they aren't too boneheaded and stupid, they end up playing better than maybe people expect, which is the case with Goff.
And we get Tom Savage versus Blaine Gabbert.
Yay!
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
I mean,
hey, it's your life. It's your free time. It's your disposable income. So I'm never one to call for a boycott unless it's something just so egregiously offensive. But if the Texans have the roof closed Sunday.
Oh, they
the
will.
The forecast high temperature is 68 degrees with a 0% chance of rain.
Believe it. It's coming.
You think it's
you
closed?
And I if I hear the roof is closed Sunday morning, I'm not going to the game. I can impose
you
one-person meaningless boycott, but I'm not going because it will not be hard to come up with a better three-hour method of using time in my life than watching Tom Savage against Blaine Gabbert and Bill O'Brien some lame post-game press conference.
You and I are both on this whole thing about why the hell did you even make a retractable roof in the first place?
So you could swing here and look at our retractable roof. We have the utmost state-of-the-art stadium in the NFL. Yeah.
Well, you needed the roof in that stadium for rodeo and
the
stuff
rodeo
like that.
Yeah, they didn't care.
When you have,
the
roof's
never
have,
open for the rodeo.
When they have concerts and other things in there, you got to have.
It's not open for concerts.
You got to have.
They open it in the middle of the week.
No, I'm saying you
got to
be able to
Gaga
close it.
To
is the point?
Jump.
I get leaving it open for football so it can be played outdoors, but other events need a roof if they're going to be in that
right,
stadium.
So
and it had to be
a
multi-purpose
fixed,
stadium.
No, it should have been a fixed roof. Save the $50 million on the retractability, and that's that. You know, for 15 years they grass the trays. It's going to be great. And finally, in year 15, well, we can't figure out this grass stuff. So now it's an artificial turf.
Yep. Field turf as it is.
And they think their home field advantage is magnified with the roof closed. Imagine how awful this team would be if they didn't have the additional
the noise
of the roof being
the
closed.
The 12th man, yeah.
The hum of the lights will be louder than the crowd on Sunday if the roof is closed.
I'm going to tell you this. The only reason why I say don't boycott Sunday and the only reason why they won't, and it'll be a big deal, is because of Andre and inducting Andre Johnson as the initial member of the Ring of Honor.
And that's 4 minutes, and then you can leave.
Okay, then you can go.
And kind of neat that Larry Fitzgerald will be in the building, right? The two defining wide receivers for a few years in there before Megatron vaulted.
If you don't have to go get audio, why would you go anyways? I don't really understand that. Really? Because you can watch it at home. You know it's the same game, right?
I do. I figured that out. Yeah.
And the press box. Tailgate and the communal experience.
I'm saying from a media the press box is not the ideal place to watch a Texans game.
Oh, Nick Sciarra says it is.
Oh, it's horrible.
It is.
The writers decreed years ago, we'll keep the windows closed because I guess we can't walk and chew gum at the same time and the noise might be distracting as we're typing our little pearls of wisdom.
You've met Barry Warner.
I have not watched a game in the press box in, what, 17 years.
Okay.
So what do? You just pill for
someone's
seats?
But the meal is free. There is that.
You pill for someone's seats that aren't sitting in them?
I have a set place basically where I stand and watch the game.
Huh.
I like feeling like I'm at a game, not behind a window.
I hear you. All right, we're going to take a break. We got plenty more to get to with Charlie before he heads out for the weekend at 2 o'clock, so stay tuned. And if there's something you want to chime in, feel free to join us, 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line, or hit us up on Twitter. Back with a whole lot more Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Because I'm so good, rich folks do not want me around.
And throw Charlie Pelullo in the mix for one more segment as he does what he normally does, and that's joins us on Mondays and Fridays from 1:30 to 2 o'clock. You can also catch the Charlie Pelullo Show on SportsBeat 94.1 FM.
SportsMap.
SportsMap.
What'd you say? What'd you say?
SportsBeat.
So it's like a long
SportsBeat is
flashback.
I really did.
Wow.
That's a long time ago, right?
SportsMap.
Was that Star 610?
Oh, no, that's KTRH back in the 90s.
Yep. Oh, yep. Sports Beat.
Who did you do that back then?
Were you solo?
I was here back then.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah. It wasn't just a complete
no,
mess
it wasn't.
Up. It was,
who was the first person you were on air with here in Houston as a tandem?
Doing a talk show?
Yes.
Rich Lord. A Saturday show about fall of 1990.
You guys started on a Saturday?
We started a Saturday show that had not existed.
Wow. And that was with KTRH?
Yeah, they called it Houston Game Day.
We moved it to Sunday, yeah. But no. But then you went from KTRH to, wasn't it Star 610 at the time?
Yes. Yeah, I forget whether it was Star when I first went over there. I think it had become Sports Radio 610 at that point.
Because at the time, with KTRH, at one point, that was the only sports talk there was on radio. There was not a full-time sports station, was there?
No, there was not.
Yeah.
Martini and Edmonds was the other sport. I know when I first moved down here, Anita Martini one of the first women to do sports talk. And it's most of the audience. What are they talking about?
She was the first. She was inducted
in
into the Astros Media Hall of Fame. Wall of Fame, right?
You're correct, sir.
Yes.
To go with another way outdated reference.
Yep. But I remember that. So, yeah, Sports Map 94.1, Charlie's show is Monday through Friday. Was it 11 to 1?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it's something like that. Yeah, see, I just want to make sure I get these details right now.
That's it.
So, last night, Altuve gets MVP. We were talking about it a little bit. I was a little bit worried because there were people putting some shade out there on social media that they thought because of the big city and the publicity and everything of Aaron Judge that he might upset Altuve. Thankfully, he didn't. Thankfully, I think they got it right. But we were talking about
the social media world was out of line. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, shocker, right? But the fact that he's such a humble guy that we ran the audio clip of when MLB Network finally gave him the word, and he figured it out while they were giving the tallies of the votes.
His head was bowed.
And he was almost going to cry. And you're like, how can you not love this guy?
And he's so cute and cuddly on top of everything else. But really, they're in a perfect window. Altuve, Correa, you can say all the same about him.
Yep.
Springer's a very engaging guy, and each with their backstories. Springer with the stuttering and everything that he's come along there. Altuve is the complete package. Correa is just so polished, and now, he got engaged after Game 7 of the World Series. And Bregman's the one who brings a little bit of...
I was going to say, Bregman's that guy.
Hook me up, Kate Upton.
Bregman's the guy that's going to give you the little F you every now and then, but hey, you still love
what
him
you
too
want.
Because he...
What you want.
Yeah. He adds a little fire to the mix. So we were talking about it throughout the week, but if you look at that team right now and you say, what do they need? We said, obviously, bullpen help first and foremost. Do you see this as a destination city now for free agents more so than in the past where they say, hey, now I want to go play for Houston. They're primed to do it now, and they obviously, between bullpen and a closer, they could do some things where they have some openings.
As always, if you throw enough money out there, because by the same criterion, other than the Astros just actually did win the World Series, well, the Dodgers are right there. The Cubs are right there. The Yankees have a base of young talent right now that is sensational. The Indians is a desirable place to live, probably a cut below. Washington Nationals. The Red Sox are not in a bad place. So, no, I don't think in the end that people are saying, I'll take 30% less to go pitch for the Astros. But they are in a spot. Look, the bullpen needs addressing. It was below average for the season and a disaster in the postseason. Right? Do they want to add a DH? They're in contact with Jonathan Lucroy. Would that be Lucroy in, Gattis out? And they know they have at least one catcher for 2019. I would think it would be a two-year deal with Lucroy. But they can very reasonably say, you know what, we're not going to do anything. We're going to play a pat hand. We just won the damn World Series. We have more prospects, and they can keep their powder dry to make a move within the season if they decide, okay, Giles is a spent case. Let's move on. I think revisiting with the Orioles on Zach Britton. If your doctors tell you his arm is all right, you know, you offer Giles and Musgrove. I mean, they have the goods to be competitive, to pursue whatever it is that they want. I think one bullpen meaningful addition is the most important component of their offseason. But they just won the World Series with what they had and still have players who can get better on their roster. So it's an awesome time to be an Astros fan.
As an owner, wouldn't that be a Houston thing to do is to stand pat?
But having won the World Series, don't you think that's your get-out-of-jail-free card for a good
while? It kind of is, but then you know that the window's going to be open, and it's going to be open for the next 3 to 5 years, and that means go for it, not just sit there and hope it happens again.
By the standards of dynasty in this era, where it's tough to truly have one in baseball, they're in a window where they can at least be a legit World Series competitor for, as you said, a five-year window here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They control Altuve for 2 years, Springer for 3, Correa for 4, Bregman for 5. But for them to go out, all right, Giles was an okay closer, but then the meltdown, you want a better closer. But to go throw 4 years, $70 million at Wade Davis, or 3 years, $45 million at Greg Holland, they are bad investments historically, unless you're talking Mariano Rivera, Kenley Jansen with the Dodgers, the true made men of the position. So I'm not looking for that kind of expense. And their plan worked at the ultimate level, taking the payroll down to $1.98 a few years ago.
Yep.
So that they have a middle-of-the-pack payroll on the backs of such tremendous, young, cheap talent. I think they can bide their time. And they do short, mid, and longer-term budgeting where they're going to have to factor in the mega contracts to come for Altuve and Correa presumptively. And, you know, where does Bregman develop at a player? So I really think they have the carte blanche to go whatever direction they want. But sure, it should include one relief pitcher.
Yeah, I definitely think so, for sure. We even said Morrow out there. Morrow's out there, and he's a guy that you saw brings a lot to the table. Would he be willing to skip on the Dodgers and take a shot at the Astros?
Or is offer more money here.
Yeah, that's the big thing, and that's why I said
the cost of living, state income tax, that type of stuff. If it's a close call, the Astros have a lot to offer.
No question.
But if you overpay for a reliever, how does that sit with guys on the team who are waiting their turn to get paid a year, two, 3 years from now? Memories can be long, and you know the agents are always in guys' ears. Go for every dollar you can get, because the agent's 3%. The cost of living and all that, they want their 3% and the prestige for when they're recruiting their next clients.
You think the players are looking at them as overpaying to go out and get a closer, like a legit closer? Like Wade Davis, to me, is a legit closer. I would have to disagree with you that wouldn't be overpaying. I mean, he's done it. He's proven he can do it. Now, is he Mariano Rivera? Absolutely not. But when you statistically, he can close.
He's been terrific, although he faded the last couple of months of the season. Holland, he's over 30 now. I mean, Holland, health risk negates a long-term contract.
Did what he did, though, in Colorado with a bounce-back year. I mean, to go out and get a guy like those two to bolster the one real weakness on the team, you think the guys look at that and say, ah.
If you go sign a relief pitcher for $15 million per year, and if you're not ready to back up the truck right now for Jose Altuve in an extension,
but are they, though?
Jose Altuve's making $6 million next season. You're going to pay Greg Holland $15 or Mike Minor
$11 You pay Gurriel double that. I mean, you pay Gurriel way more than what Altuve's getting. The problem is, just like with Correa, they want to negotiate with these guys. They're not willing to do that because they know that they're going to be able to back the truck up when the time comes. You get less now if you negotiate as opposed to later, especially in the case of guys like Correa.
How much money would I have to pay to watch all 3 hours of Savage versus Gabbert? Uninterrupted.
Pay me?
You can't change the remote.
Nope. I'm not watching it.
Oh, come on.
I'll watch bits and pieces of it. Nope.
You think $10 does it?
Yeah.
Oh, God, no. You'd have to pay me. Honestly, like, seriously, if you put a $100 bill, I would watch it. Less than that, I would not watch the whole thing this weekend.
Sounds reasonable. Pay-per-view, Barry. Available on the website.
I can't believe you're going to go.
Well, if
the roof is closed.
Definitely not. If the roof is open, depends how long softball runs.
You're going. That's it. You're going.
We got to get you a hobby.
All right. We appreciate it, my friend. Have a good weekend, and we will talk to you on Monday on the flip side of the, what we call it, the Savage Bowl at NRG after the Andre Johnson day. So Charlie's out. We're still in. We've got one in the books, two to go, plenty more of the big show. So 2 hours still on the docket of the usual suspects. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with a whole lot more right here on ESPN 97.5.